You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 5 of That's Awesome. I'm Joe. Thanks for being here again. We did take a week off last week, and we're back at it this week, but I think it's important that we address what was going on in the country, or I guess in the world, the past week. And so we decided to take last week off, and I had put up a post that suggested a couple of other podcasts that I've listened to that kind of discuss racism in our country through history and current day racism as well. Those podcasts, if you did not see the posts, are Code Switch and Lynching in America. And I think it's important to just recognize and just address really quick. I do believe that the policing system in our country needs reform, and I'm no expert on that, and I don't have all the answers and solutions, but it's something that should have happened a long time ago, and it's been being ignored and gone about the wrong way so far. So, you know, I do support what's happening. And I can say personally, I have experienced racism toward myself in a very small way. And it's something that I can never, you know, I can't even compare it to the experiences that people are having in the Black community and that people are capturing on camera. So it's terrifying. So I'm hopeful for a positive change, and I think the world has kind of come together behind this movement, and I do believe that it will bring a positive change. So in an effort to be more conscious of that stuff and be part of that positive change, last month after we emptied out the account for the donations, I personally donated my portion to Music Cares. This week I'm going to this month I'll be donating my portion of the donations to probably split it up over a few charities that support the Black Lives Matter movement and communities of color. And I'll probably narrow it down later in the month, but I would love to hear from you guys, like what organizations would you like me to donate to as well, because there are a ton of them out there. I found a website earlier today with like 140 of them. So I'm going to read through a bunch of them and figure out which ones I think I'd like to donate to. But please message me on Instagram or on the Twitter and let me know where you would like your donation money to go as well. And I will do what I can to make that happen. That being said, I'd like to move on past that. I'm sure we'll touch on it again with guests in the future and everything. But I just like to, just lastly, real quick, I just want to make sure, and I know everyone is, but I just feel like people can't hear it enough right now, is to just be safe. I know that like the protests have become more and more peaceful over time, and I'm very thankful for that. But I also just want to make sure that people are being safe in just remembering that we are still in a pandemic right now. And I don't know. You know, I think last I've heard is that it's getting worse in a lot of states as they're reopening. So just be careful. I think, again, I support the movement. I support the protests and all that stuff. But if you can be socially distant and do it, do it. Okay. Now, I have mentioned to make sure you message me on Instagram and Twitter. And I also just want to mention real quick that if you have over the past week, I've had some new help from someone named Josh. Josh has been amazing. He's been helping me run all the socials. So Twitter, Instagram, stuff like that. So if you message and expect to get something back from me, it's usually going to be Josh, but I do see every message and he tells me about every message as well. So make sure you say hi to Josh. I will absolutely be having him on the podcast with me probably during these intro parts as time goes on and we get more comfortable. So I'm pretty excited about that as well. He's been amazing. What else has been going on? We've been writing a ton of new material for Ice Nine Kills. So everyone that's here because they're an Ice Nine Kills fan will be excited to hear that. I'm very pumped about the producers that we've been working with and songwriters we've been talking to and the process that's been happening and the songs that we've completed so far. I'm super, super pumped on. And it's kind of reinvigorated my desire to get back out on the road, and I've been thinking more and more about what that is going to look like when it happens, and if we're going to be in like seated theaters with space between the seats, or if they're going to do limited capacity clubs. I'm not sure, but I did see I don't know how to pronounce his last name, so I'm probably going to butcher it right now, but Mark Rebillet or Rebillet or something like that. I don't know if it's the double L is that sound or anything, but he's this kind of comedian musician that's very, very funny, and he does these like improv songs. He's out on tour right now doing a drive-in tour, which I think is brilliant. So good for him for getting out there and being one of the first people to figure it out. But yeah, he's out right now, so check out his tour dates if you're jonesing to see live music. He's hilarious and he's amazingly talented too, so go check it out. Anyway, this week was the first week I had on guests that I had never met before, and I think it went great. This was actually one of my favorite interviews I've done so far, and at this point, I think I have about 10 or 12 under my belt, even though they're not out yet. But so I interviewed Anthony and Boz from Capstan. Capstan is this great kind of fusion-y kind of band. They're definitely pop punk, but they're definitely metalcore, and they're definitely like kind of southern rock, and they have like a lot of that Every Time I Die feel to them as well, and they're a fellow Fearless Records band. Really pumped to have them on. I've been listening to them actually for a while now, and I even mentioned in the interview that I think a lot of my friends back home in Boston love this band, and they've been like telling me that I need to get more into them for years, honestly. So I'm really excited that I finally was able to sit down, find out more about their story. And I think their story is actually great for bands that are wondering how they can take the next step from being, you know, the band that practices in the basement or in the garage to just getting out on the road and building that fan base organically. And I would say that while they're still building, looks like a great future for them. I would say it's a success story in how they went about making the band and the attitudes that they had in just refusing to not take it to the next level. They just did what they could to do it. I also think if you make it to the end of the interview, it is maybe one of the best tour stories I've ever heard. I've heard a lot over the years, and I've been telling people about it for like the past 2 weeks since I've done the interview because I find it so funny. So I think you'll really enjoy it. I want to thank those guys for coming on, and also thank you guys for coming back and listening and rating and subscribing and donating, all of that stuff. I really appreciate it. So yeah, I'll send it right over to Anthony and Boz. What's up, fellas?
Hey, how's it going?
We finally did it.
Yes.
Skype is just a real piece of shit sometimes. It's been like every interview I do, there's like always 10 minutes where we're just trying to find each other. it's a fucking nightmare.
It wasn't that bad. We just had it on this computer and haven't used it in a while, so I think we had to reinstall it. It made it easier on our end.
Yeah, it's so weird though, because like somehow my email is in Skype twice. I think there's like two users.
We definitely contacted.
We tried to contact the first one. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I have no idea how that happened. And then all I have to do is just like log in and log out, and somehow I appear again.
Sure. Yeah. We used the username, so it was like,
live.
Yeah, so I have no, like, somehow for such like a simple software, I still have no idea how to use this thing at all. So we're doing it. But good to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, so this will be like the first time I'm ever doing one of these with people that I have never met before. So
It
will be organic, and we'll see how it goes. But that being said, like, I am familiar with your band. I want to say, like, I just moved out to LA and I'm from Boston. I think like you're half of my friend group's like favorite band right now.
Nice.
Because awesome. Everyone I talk to at home is, everyone keeps telling me to like check you guys out. And then I don't remember the first song I heard, but I know it was always just super appealing, 'cause like you pack a lot of the stuff I like from so many different like elements into one thing, but without it sounding like super forced, you know?
Thanks, man. We take that as a huge compliment.
Yeah, it's a huge compliment.
I'm very into it. But I kind of, if I'm being honest, like I kind of haven't listened for a while. And then it was just recently when we were both doing that, what was it called? The Fearless from Home.
Yeah. Fearless at Home.
Yeah. And so I was watching it, and you guys had that video pop up. On it, right? What was that song for? What was the song?
We'll Always Be Paris.
Yeah. And that kind of like re-sparked it. So I went back and listened again, and then your manager just happened to reach out to me, and here we are.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty great. That's awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. I'm pumped. So I guess I'd love to kind of just hear the origin. I was kind of doing a little bit of research. I can't imagine this is true, but for some reason, Google says your band started in 1998.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So it's like the first thing that pops up on Google.
Jesse's trying to sort that out now. So there is an artist in Spain or France, one of the two, and he is a rapper and like a hip hop artist.
Got it.
And his cap stands CAPSTAN.
Oh, like Captain Stan.
I'm like,
we were getting grouped in there with iTunes and everything first started. No, this is not a capital S.
It's always so funny when that happens, when like people's music gets mixed together and you know, like put on the playlist and it'll just be like metal, and then all of a sudden they'll just be like trap. Somehow it's always trap.
It is always trap.
Why is it that way?
Yeah.
So weird.
So not 98. When did you guys kind of get together?
So I moved to Florida from Detroit, Michigan in 2012 to go to school. So I quit all the bands up there, and I'm like, well, if I'm not going to do it on the artist side, I'm going to do it on, you know, the audio side. So I went to school Full Sail, and I met Harrison, our guitarist, and he's been a lifelong friend of Boz.
Randomly. My best friend met him, but I had – my family's from Detroit. And he lived 9 houses down from my cousin Adam.
It's like
and
really weird.
I used to go see his band play. He was in a punk band called Trophy Boys, but he played drums.
Yeah.
So Harry's like, you'll never guess who I met, because I had shown Harry his bands multiple times.
Oh, wow.
And even though we're the same age, they kind of always had like at that point a little bit more of a cemented like a following, and they were doing things.
Just doing it for years, you know.
And so that to me, number one, was like a huge sign. I was in school at Michigan State, and I graduated. The band started as a recording project with Anthony and Harry 2012.
Okay.
And then when
did
you
meet? When you were still in Michigan?
So when I moved and met Harry in school, we started Capstan as like a recording project.
Got it.
It's kind of where the name came from. It powers the tape.
Oh, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. So we just started messing around. And at one point we had some demos, and I'm like, yo, do you mind if I just try singing on this? Like, I don't know. Like, I'll just give it a shot. And he's like, yeah, sure. And as soon as we came out of the vocal take, he was just like, yo, I know a drummer. Like, let's make this thing for real.
Yeah, you can sing.
So like it kind of formed like 2013, but the final lineup and the way that we wanted to do things started like 2015.
Okay. Well, I moved down the first week of 2014. So over the years that they kind of had gotten started with two other members when they became kind of like a full-time band, it wasn't really a solidified lineup.
Yeah, we just kind of – we had a fill-in guitarist, and our friend Kevin played the bass for us for a while.
Just one of those recording projects.
But it really came to fruition. My band, we played like the local stage on Warped and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like we kind of did some things, but you know you – and it was a college band, so like I was hoping we could do good things, but as soon as I got done with school, I had already up to that point thought like this seems like the thing. Like I've become friends with like him and our drummer Scott. We didn't know Joe yet at the time, but it was like, and you have to make those hard decisions sometimes. And I just, you know, I graduated and basically saved up enough money to pack up all my shit in a minivan. We'll and just, yeah, we
down.
Yeah, the official start of Capstan, I think of is
when you were there.
Yeah, yeah. 2014. So that was like where things kicked off, and then we met Joe in 2015.
Okay,
was when that transition, and then he just that really solidified. Like, okay, this is gonna be a thing.
Got it. So. And is that kind of when you started taking it, like, I hate saying this, but like to the next level kind of thing.
Yeah, like we bought a van and we toured. Our first tour was 2015.
Yeah,
we, you know, we went.
That's when we decided, because we had just played local shows. We had the Capstan house, which was the house that we all lived in from the time that I moved down up until 2016.
Yeah, we would just house bands. It was like a band hotel, essentially. Yeah. And then we would have shows there, too. It was a rented house. I don't know how we
never got involved. You know what's so funny is my old band. I was in a band called the Venetia Fair for a long time. And we,
Fair.
Yeah, yeah, I played keys in that band. But we had a house, too, and it was just like every band that came through, like the north of Boston area was just crashing. And
that's exactly what we did. And even if they weren't playing the show, like we could just – We became friends with so many bands that ended up are now like doing things.
Yeah, now they're like your colleagues, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so cool. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's really funny. I actually remember, and I haven't even spoken to them about it yet. But when somehow I don't remember why, but at my old band house, we called it band house, right? Like,
cool.
I think it was like before, like right before they popped, like got really big, like Miss May I stayed at our house, or was it Miss May I or no, it was Memphis Mayfire.
We always get them confused. Too,
Well, M's, there's a lot of M's. Yeah.
Good one.
But now like I see them around all the time and I still just, I'm always like in a rush passing like at festivals and stuff. And I never get to be like, you guys crashed at my house like in 2010.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's that's funny awesome. How that works, but I love that. Like it's, I think like it's interesting to see, and I'm glad that you guys have had this experience too. Cause I can kind of tell even by like your latest music video, like you guys live together, you're friends, like you're into the same shit. Right. And you can kind of see that, like it, like I said, it play out in your video and everything. And I think that like really speaks to like, the dedication that a band has to like all just get together in one house, like fully immerse themselves in the scene, like have other bands come through and stay, and then just like balls to the wall, just go for it. Right. I mean, that's the kind of vibe that I got, I get from that. And I respect that because it's something that I really tried to do with my old band. Didn't have the success that you guys are having, but like, you know, in the band I'm in now too, like I know they have a history like that too. So it's something that I always like to see happen out of like, you know, just a bunch of dudes getting together, not really help from like an outside source yet, just decided to just go for it. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, having the space, like, I just think that that's crucial. Us both being touring artists, like anybody that opens their home to you when you're on the road is like a massive, like
they become
it's,
like,
it's amazing.
It's huge. Best so, friend, just
yeah,
because
just
of
because
that.
Of that, because it, you know, you're out there, it's like, oh, I guess we're sleeping in the van tonight. Someone opens their home, you know, like it's,
do you have anyone in your band that's like the van sleeping guy?
So, like if you park the van and someone has to stay.
Well, not even has to. Like, to be honest, I always loved staying in the van.
You did? Okay.
I loved it. But we had like bunks and a microwave and like all this crazy shit in there. That was great. Yeah.
We've got bunks in ours, but it's just like the platform one. Mm-hmm. So it's like the, you know, it sleeps three on top and then we call it the
dungeon.
That's
what we did. Yeah.
Where you squeeze through and then
ours is called Spooky Land.
Oh, oh nice. Nice. Going down to
and also Set It Off ripped it off from us. They had a bunk too, and they called it, I want to say they just call it, yeah, I think they called it Spooky Lane too, and they swear that they made it up, but they totally got it from us. They totally got it from us. I know they did.
Love those guys.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, that's great. They were. I toured with them back in like 2011, I want to say. Like way back when we were both kind of rising up at the time. But yeah, I saw that you guys just – was that on their – it's like the world tour they were doing, right?
Yeah, they were doing the it was like right after the Sleeping with Sirens tour, I believe.
They were doing
– they were heading back. They did like headlining shows back to California.
Great, yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, if you guys want to drive from Florida, meet up with a tour in Ohio, and then – tour all the way to Seattle
in the winter. Let's go.
Second time
Canadian winter tour.
And we're like, hell yeah. And in retrospect, like, that's really hard to do in the winter because we did Canada again. Yeah. But now it's like, with everything going on in the industry, it's kind of like, we're so glad we did that.
I would bet. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we went out with Tiny Moving Parts, Jetty Bones in Belmont.
3 days in.
3 days in, it got canceled. Oh. So. That's
such
like
a bummer.
Our last tour we finished.
It's a bummer, man. The industry, it's like, come back.
I know. Yeah. So you guys had to like just bail in the middle of the tour?
Yeah.
Yeah, they canceled it after the third night.
It was weird, too. And
it was going to be a good tour, too.
Yeah, we talked about it in Chicago. That even that night, as COVID started to become like apparent, like, and there was starting to be writing on the wall, it was really weird because the way that like the fans interacted, like kind of in the crowd,
last night was weird. You could feel that people were uncertain
or something. One of our weirdest Chicago shows. And it was like, how long are you going to keep pressing into this before? And we were one of the last tours to call it. Like at the time we were Tiny Moving. I'll give them props. Their team was on top of everything. And it was all about safety and everything like that, but they really wanted to see before making like a, you know, too early of a decision. Mm-hmm. And it just, you could tell by that last day that like, this isn't going to work right now. Yeah. And
what day was it that you guys called it?
It was in Palatine, Illinois.
So outside
that
Chicago.
Was the last show outside Chicago.
I can tell you. And we were like by far one of the last ones to call it. Let's see.
Yeah, I think I felt the same way about the one we were on, to be honest. I thought we were going to call it much earlier.
Did you guys make it through?
No. We were in Europe with Papa Roach and Hollywood Undead.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, and I think the night that Trump announced like the travel ban was the day that like we had played our last show that day. And we had like literally found out maybe an hour before he made that announcement, which on our time was like 2 a.m. That we had booked our flights like an hour before that on like empty planes. And then the next morning the planes were all overbooked. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ours was March 13th.
Yeah. So about the same day, just about the same day. Yeah.
So I remember we were, when we were driving up to the tour, there were already tours starting to get canceled. Right. So March 9th, March 10th, I remember thinking like, this isn't a good sign.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily my parents live in Michigan. So from Chicago, we just drove there and we had a day to chill
and then just waited out.
Yeah. And then we just to see what was going on.
Right.
And we just headed straight back to Florida after that.
Here we are.
Sucks.
Yeah, it does. It was crazy. It would have been good, but you know, hopefully the industry comes back roaring.
Like, I know. Right. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes though, because you know, I mean, even I don't know, maybe I'm like a glass half empty kind of guy when it comes to this, but I just can't see like rock shows have got to be like the most disgusting, like germ filled places where people just give no shits about sanitation whatsoever.
That was my thing too, is even when it does come back and they open up, how many people are going to be afraid to come to shows?
Right.
Like that's my thought. It's like, how long until this gets better?
And I honestly think like the last things to come back will be this. Like, you know, a movie theater is packed, but at least people aren't moving around and climbing on top of each other and everything.
And sweating and sweating.
Right. But I don't know. It'll be interesting. And now we're seeing all these like people do these the drive-in tours. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Weird.
It's pretty interesting. I can't imagine playing to a bunch of cars.
Yeah.
In a parking lot.
Kind of funny. One of the weird things about that is like, if you could make like your guarantee and like people could buy merch, like I would definitely give it a shot.
I would too. I feel like it's kind of a cool, I mean, I can't put myself in the headspace of being like, oh, I'm pumped right now. And I'm in like, you know, I'm on stage and people are like singing back at me, but instead it's just like a bunch of people like maybe leaning on their car horn or something,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Cool. Like, yeah, weird to think about. Yeah.
It's definitely weird, but I do like seeing like all the, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of creativity going on right now just absolutely. In order to keep the music industry alive. Not even just from bands and stuff, but also from the people running the industry, like labels and, yeah. and distro oh, and God. Management and everything. So it is somewhat inspiring. And I think the last episode I just did was with Tyler Smith, who's a producer. He's also a frontman of Danger Kids. He was kind of saying like, God, I completely lost my train of thought. He was saying like, this is like an opportunity almost for the music industry to fix itself. Right. Because the music industry was so anti everything that was happening the entire early 2000s with like streaming and downloads. And they were kind of like, they got the butt end of it because they were trying to fight it while every other industry, like movies, for example, right? Like they saw it happening. And at that point, everyone saw like, there's no stopping this. So now Netflix is huge and Disney Plus and all that. But the music industry is like still catching up to that, I feel like. So,
yeah. I can see that for sure.
I think that this could be like a cool opportunity for the industry to kind of right itself. And I don't even necessarily want to say do right by the musicians, because obviously, like, you know, musicians took a hit during that whole thing. But more so like just a better way to sustain itself, I feel like, you know?
Yeah. I just read an article the other day and it was kind of, you know, it looked a little clickbaity and I didn't know. But a lot of people were like, this is a couple minute read, you know, posting on my socials. You should read this if you're a musician. Mm-hmm. And it did actually bring up some good points about the fact that like, we don't really know when this thing's going to end, mm-hmm. Especially for our industry. We don't really know when we're going to see things come back to like, quote unquote, normal.
Right.
If they ever go back fully to normal, which I still have hopes they do. But I think the one thing that article brought up that I didn't think of that is an interesting thought is like, there's going to be a ton of people in the industry. And I guess a lot of good people could fall by the wayside too,
yeah.
but it's going to push out a lot of people it that is. Weren't doing it for the right reasons. People that are trying to take advantage of up and coming bands, the pay for playlist, the pay, the monthly payment for me yeah. to manage you, to put you on. A lot of that is going to be pushed to the wayside. Yeah, because a lot of those people are only doing it for money.
Right.
And if they're not finding money, or, you know, maybe they're doing it for status, or maybe they think this is how the industry will go.
Mm-hmm.
I think that reset is actually really important because the people that really matter and really care, and that it's really truly at their core, the idea of like musicians and their well-being and growing a great product, those are what will survive.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people doing it for the wrong reasons will kind of fall by the wayside the longer this lasts. So like, I think he's right, who you talk to, he's absolutely right. And it's like going to be interesting to see what the climate is
yeah.
when things kind of back to normal. Like, what's going to happen?
That's yeah. really interesting. I'd love to actually take a deeper read into that because I think that is true. And I didn't really yeah. think about how there are people that are working in the industry that have just kind of been able to coast by with the way things are just because bands were just doing work themselves, right? Like, there's yeah. a lot of people that just kind of coast on the bands that they work with success and the bands kind of doing everything, which I don't think is super common or whatever. And I used to work on the yeah. industry side of things too. So I've seen both things, but, yeah, I do think that could be a really big positive to see some of those people that are kind of just taking advantage of
everyone. Yeah, take a totally. Hike,
you know?
And for us, especially, a positive is we were kind of ready for the album cycle again. Not that we're going to release anything anytime soon, but we've just gone.
We have been nonstop every day
in creating.
Yeah,
creating.
We have so many songs we've been working on.
Yeah,
so
there's going to be a huge boom of new music in like the next 6 months.
Which is great.
Yeah,
which
it's going to be nuts.
Like, who doesn't want that, you
right,
know?
Right, it will be cool. So you guys are, where are you at in your album cycle now?
When did we release Restless Hearts?
So we dropped Restless Hearts September 20th. And so, I mean,
2019.
Yeah, 2019. Yeah. So it hasn't even been out a full year yet. And if anything, even if we went to the studio today, I mean, nothing's going to be released till after the winter anyway. Right. So with pretty much how it goes. But it's cool because I don't think we've ever had a stretch where the sole focus in our lives is working on the songs.
Right. We can't work right now, you know, on
anyway,
our second
jobs. You're kind of forced to, right?
Yeah, it's like, why would you not?
And it's work because we've been meeting like 30 to 40 hours a week. Mm. It's like going to a job, but it's also, I don't know, I think we tend to think that
right, yeah.
I can't wait till it's like a real like job.
Right.
But when
you guys write, do you kind of just like get together and jam stuff out?
No, actually. So how it works.
We're interesting.
Guitar Pro.
Oh, dude, I was huge on Guitar Pro before. I loved it.
Our guitar player, Joe, he will literally write a full song and bring it to the table. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about it and, you know, we'll decide, like, we kind of produce
we'll
it.
We'll all produce
within
it.
The,
sure.
Within the band. And so he'll go make the changes. And then as soon as we're like, yeah, I love that, he'll Harry, our guitarist, has like an in-home studio, essentially. Mm-hmm. And they will literally demo the song. With fake drums, but they demo the song. And then as soon as that is completed, he'll kind of doctor it up. And then we're like, okay, let's start working on vocals. And we all like, you know, work with lyrics and everything. And
yeah, everybody, vocal processes, everybody.
And so, you know, we have what?
We have 10 songs.
10 songs right now.
Wow.
We've already scrapped 10
yeah,
11
that's the
songs.
Way to do it.
Just go into, like, I'll go into the vocal booth and, like, hey, this is the lyrics for this part. Okay, let's track it. And we just continue to track it. So like when we do go into the studio to actually record, we have 10 full finished songs that we think are great.
That's great.
You know,
it's part of that process is interesting. Like with the Guitar Pro thing that Anthony talked about, one of the reasons Joe likes it is Joe has a huge background in technical music, and Joe really
adds theory. Yeah,
in music theory, mm-hmm. but just. He definitely adds the flair to Capstan of where we really test the waters, adding a lot of genres together. Mm-hmm. And with Guitar Pro, what he loves is that his actual style of playing, his abilities aren't hampered by or like what he can create in his mind through his fingers on a guitar. He can write it up in his mind and then he goes back and he relearns it because he's created on a program. So it gives him no bounds.
Okay, so you got to have him. Shoot me a text because I have a program that's going to change his life.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
really?
Because that's how I write too.
What program, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, it's a plugin.
For
anything really, but it's called Odin.
And oh, yeah, Odin. I know
right?
Odin.
And do you ever use it? Do you ever use it with an amp sim on it?
Yes.
It's like the best thing ever.
Yeah, we could knock out songs like that.
Yeah, so it's like cheating. Yeah, it's insane.
Crazy. We found it and it was a game changer. For Restless Hearts Keep Running, it's what we did
That's
on
what we
everything.
Did, yeah.
And then I think one of the main things, we haven't really done it, I think sometimes for like rhythms, but Joe with the leads, he actually is super obsessed with like, he wants to demo them and record them and get how they feel. Mm-hmm. So he's like obsessed with, and that's on this record cycle. He's been more like, I want to actually demo them.
Nice.
But
yeah.
Odin is beautiful.
It is pretty insane, isn't it?
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
It's like, you don't need to know how to play anything anymore. it's pretty
kind
nuts.
Of scary at one point, but now I understand why he's like, okay, now for this one, I'm going to do it. So like when it comes time to record, he's not like, oh, right. I got to get, down.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you as a writer for me, like, because I write for a lot of other people too, and it's like, as a writer, it's like the best thing in the world.
Oh, it has to be perfect. Yeah.
I would never consider myself like a great guitar player or anything, but just being able to not be hindered by my own abilities.
Exactly.
Is
yeah,
great.
No, it's nice. Yeah.
That's how Joe feels. And it is a really interesting process because he also, like, Harry is the king of our band, he will come up with a riff. And like the riff will be, it's really flowy and feels great. And then Joe can kind of take it and he can do a million different things to one riff and figure out, okay, this song could go like this. Well, then he can delete it all and rewrite a whole nother song. Like, and he can do that without ever picking up a guitar. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting because that also something we experience with Restless Heart is you have to continue to keep the human element of the music. And like, we've really found, I think, a good balance now.
Yeah.
And that's why he likes to play it now too, because he wants to feel, is this human enough? And
we really learned
that on the record.
When I do that stuff with all those like plugins and even like with Guitar Pro, there's always like, once a month, I'll just go in and write like a 2-minute song that is completely beyond anything I could even imagine playing on any instrument, just to like get it all out of my system. Be like, yeah, I know I can make this sound stupid and fun if I just do all this bullshit and then get it out of my system, and then I can like kind of hone it back in, you know?
All right. I feel good.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. Cool. Well, that's, I think we're all on the same page, because you guys seem like you write the same way as me. You're kind of like the same kind of group that I always had aspired to be like part of, you know?
We think too.
Yeah. So let's talk about, so let's go back to the history. So you guys got together, you're down in Florida, everyone makes the big move. So you get down there, are your goals to just like get an album done, or are you just trying to hit the road and like be on the road as much as possible?
It was hit the road for sure.
Yeah.
It was absolutely hit the road.
With having so many bands come through the Capstan House at the time, like we were playing those shows locally. And I think we did like a couple, because like I said, I had the minivan. And so when I moved, it actually gave the band a possibility to just take our gear places.
Sure.
Because no one had like a car like that. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as that happened, we were like, okay, we got to play some shows, see how that goes. We started to be like, okay, this is good. But then fast forward a little bit, when Joe joined, it was a transition a little bit. I was actually playing rhythm guitar at the time. Mm-hmm. And Kevin, our friend, was playing bass. Kevin had started nursing school. So he was kind of like, he just got very busy.
Yeah.
And our friend Joe, who had recorded with Harry.
From another band. He was a vocalist in another band.
Him and Scott had this thing right away where like Joe's playing like the Faceless and Scott's doing like blast beats on drums. And they're like,
We got to work together.
And the Kevin thing happened, and I'm a bassist by trade.
Okay.
I played bass my whole life and kind of guitar in college with the bands that I was in. And we both sing in the band.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, musically, it's like a business decision at that point. You have to decide what's the best role for everybody to play.
Yeah.
So Joe joined on guitar. Me playing bass gives me the ability to focus a little bit more on singing while we're playing live. And that happened. And then it was like, we got to buy a van. We got to get on the road, and we got to see if like we are capable of actually doing this. Mm-hmm. And I think from there, it became not only are we capable, but we were pretty good at writing, and the way we all get
touring,
along,
though, too. I think we got pretty good at touring.
Dude, people discount that. Like, you have to be good at it, and not only do you have to be good at it, you have to be like agreeable to everyone else too, right? Like it's hard to find the right people to tour with.
It really is.
One of the things about us that I think we all find super interesting is we're all like at our core, we're all very similar, but like kind of our day-to-day and our interests even, or our thought processes are all very different. Mm-hmm. And so we have all these core values, and like we all believe in, like we want to leave a legacy, and we're not just like writing music to create, something that's going to get us paid. Like we're trying to do something that helps someone through a hard time.
Well, it's also, tell like your influences, I feel like, really shine through in your music. Like I can tell that you're not like writing it for just like mass appeal.
Yeah, right. We're not. But we're trying to have a little bit of that.
No, I mean, you can tell there's total pop elements, but the way I hear it in your guys' music is like, you know, like the song I just watched, the video I just watched, it was like it's a big sing-songy like pop chorus. And then all of a sudden there's just like a blast beat part, you know? And it's like, it's so sick because like, I feel like when I hear something like that, like, yeah, there's stuff that appeals to everyone there, but I got the vibe that it was more like, you just liked it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, yeah, I think the main core for us is, like, I mean, music got me through so much going through life, and it's like, you know what, why not give that back if we have the opportunity and the platform and the ability to do so?
Yeah.
You know, like, we've worked really hard to get to where we are, I think, and that has always been the main goal. It's just as many people that this can help, you know?
I like, think that's great.
That's my take on it, at least.
Sure. Yeah. That was definitely, like, that's, like, a defining piece about all of us. You talk about touring and stuff, like, we're the kind of band that we all, like, I mean, unless someone's, like, not feeling good or, like, we're busy loading up because we have an eight-hour drive to get to the next venue the next days, we pretty much always try to all be there at merch every night. We don't want to, like,
meet the people that like
inaccessible.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah.
They're the reason we're there.
We really have that connection. We pack all – Anthony runs our merch store, packs every order. We write people, like, notes and stuff. And, like, we just – we want to create, like, a real feeling of – that we're not any higher up than you.
Yeah.
That we're not anything
we're
more
just
special.
We're just people, too. We're playing
music. Well, it's also great to be able to create, like, a community that's centered around, like, the common thing being, you know, your music, right? Like – It just makes this immediate connection with people, and instead of having to, like, get to know them first or whatever, they feel like they can relate. And the more you can, like, nurture that type of relationship, the stronger that fan base will be, or even just, like, the feeling of community in general. Right.
Yeah. Right. That's so important nowadays too. Cause I mean, not to say that we see it a lot, but, like, a real eye opening experience was Warped Tour 2018. Mm-hmm. Just seeing all of the other ways that bands not only, like, act, what their day to day goes, who they are as people, like, getting to know them one on one. Like, I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong, but everybody's very different.
Yeah.
Of how they handle things and how they approach things.
Warped Tour is definitely a great place to. I don't know. There's so much creative. There's a lot of cringy shit too. Like, there is
of course
there is no shortage of bands doing things where I'm like, oh man, that's a bad
one. I wouldn't do that, but I guess that's their thing.
Yeah, right. Well, let's talk about Warped Tour too, because I'm curious about, like, the size of your band at the time in 2018. That was probably a pretty big deal for you guys, right? Like, jumping on that tour. Yeah.
It was. Huge. That
and
was
like
sick.
I remember Venetia Fair did Warped Tour in 2011, I want to say.
Okay.
And I look back and have fond memories of it, right?
Yeah.
But it is a fucking grind.
Oh, 100%.
Like, not being in the bus, right, and having to be in your merch booth every day, all day. It's like it's a full-time, like, nonstop for 2.5 months, right?
Yeah. So we, I'll never forget it because, so we rented a bus with our boys and Sleep on it. So we both were able to at least have that.
Good.
So two vans. But I'll never forget when you like network, I guess, and meet the people, it's late.
Yeah.
And we would bus call 1-2 o'clock in the morning. You got to be at the gear truck at 8 in the morning. It 8 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, it's crazy. Even if you're not playing till like 6 p.m., right? You just got to be in there at 8 a.m.
You don't even know that. So it's like, okay, well, I got to be there at 8, whatever. I could probably take a nap. But then you have to balance catering. You have to balance if you have any press. You have to go get your water and your beer or whatever. You know, that's all over the place. And then you have to schedule a meet and greet. So it's like – and like just the land, there's so much land.
Well, it's also just like at a certain point, you just like, it's just another parking lot, right? Like you just lose track of even like what state is. Yeah.
I think I really realized on Warped Tour, you know, going into it for the first time, you don't have any idea. You don't know what you're really getting yourself into. And I will say, being a band that didn't have really any crew, we had a merch guy and then our friend Dieter was helping with photography, but he was also shooting for like other bands.
And playing when they could.
And
he was doing catering and stuff.
He was in
too.
The catering. So like we didn't have anybody that was like strictly there, which a lot of the bigger bands do. They bring crew just to help unload the trucks and things like that.
Yeah.
So number one, that made it all we had to rely on ourselves. But once you like get through something like that, like, and I, I don't know if I'll ever be more emotional about
Hold
an
on
experience.
One second, guys. What's up, Dan? You need anything? Sorry, that's our guitarist just popped in.
Oh, cool.
I live with him. They said hi.
Nice.
I think he's super high right now.
Nice.
Beautiful. But Warped Tour is one of those things, to me, it was like, I don't know. I know a lot of people that still do great things in the industry they may not get a chance to do it, or especially like not having it last year and what's going to replace it, or like, it's a weird time for that in general, but I think Warped Tour is like, it's like earning your stripes.
Oh, I totally agree. Dude, Warped Tour was the hardest I have ever worked in my life.
It's
joke.
It's the hardest we have ever worked, especially for your music.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never once put that much heart and dedication. It was like you were living your band 14 to 18 hours a day.
Yeah.
Every single day you were talking to fans, you were promoting in the lines with your signs, you're trying to hustle and sell CDs. You're, like Anthony said, unloading the truck, loading up your gear, trying to network at the same
time.
I know,
it's crazy.
All your merch on those things. Oh.
Through muddy fields.
So bad. I'm so glad I could talk to you guys about this, because I'm having all these flashbacks of it. Like when we did it, we were in a van. We had no label backing. We weren't even on necessary. I think halfway through the tour, it became a real stage, but it wasn't even an official stage. It was like a Kevin Says size stage, but it wasn't so we had to. We helped build and break down the stage every night. We didn't have a driver, so we were rotating drive 2 hours a night. Right?
Dude, I don't know how we did it. Even us being our first Warped Tour, we still at least had somewhere to go.
Yeah, it was brutal, man.
You don't it's hot as shit.
When we did it, we were like, if we're doing this, we have to make this worth it. So instead of hiring a driver, instead of hiring like a designated merch person, we brought 3 extra people that were just there to walk around and sell CDs. And that was it. Right. So it was all 5 of us in the merch booth selling CDs all day, plus 3 other people. And we ended up doing there were days when we were doing 500 CDs, 600 CDs a day. It was nuts.
Not only is that good for you and for cost reasons, but you're getting your music out there.
Right. It was monumental for us. Like it was a huge thing. Ultimately, the band fell apart or whatever, but that was where we kind of felt like, oh man, we got some steam going and started getting tour offers and stuff like that beyond.
We felt that too about Warped. I think one thing I don't know. This just carries some weight for me because still to this day, I don't exactly know how it happened, but we were the only band, we're the only band on one of the top 5 stages that wasn't signed to a label.
That's cool.
So we were still in the process of getting courted and figuring out what we were doing.
Well, essentially we were on Adventure Cat. Then they really,
let's just say we weren't on a mid-major label. We were on a stepping stone at the time, and the things that Adventure Cat did for us were
huge.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Adventure Cat was started by Michael Kaminsky, who's mm-hmm. K-manager.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what's really funny is, I don't know if you guys still have a relationship with him, but Mike Kaminsky was very important to Venetia Fair too.
Really?
Oh yeah. He hooked us. He helped us out massively too. He just a friend of his saw us at a show and just messaged him, and then he took us out for breakfast the next day and
crazy.
Yeah,
that's
he's
awesome.
Great guy.
Awesome guy.
We still have a connection.
Him and Peter. Awesome.
Yeah, they were, I mean, if we didn't make that move, we wouldn't have been able to talk to the labels we did and then finally make the decision on Fearless. It was, to anybody that's listening out there, I guess, that is looking for the next step of their band, I think the worst thing people think about, one bit of advice, is don't just pinpoint this is my goal and I'll do whatever it takes to attain it, because you want to sign to Fearless, you want to sign to Hopeless and Equal Vision, Sharp Tone, you can go down the list of the mid-major record labels now, but it's it has to be the right fit,
right?
And you can't put yourself in a situation where you're hamstrung for the next 3 to 6 years by the decision you make because you're just ready to take that next step. We surrounded ourselves with great people. We found the booking agent we wanted, manager, a tour manager, and like all these people that believed in us. And when we kind of were deciding, okay, what's next? Adventure Cat kind of came in and we're like, hey, we want to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only going to be.
So was Adventure Cat after management and booking and stuff?
Yes.
Yes. Got it.
Yep. Correct. So that was like, and I think I will stand by that till the day that I die, knowing the industry that I, the way that I do, at least up to this point, the label should be the last thing.
I agree.
It should absolutely be the last thing. And people think getting the contract is going to change things. It's like you need the people from the ground level that believe in you. A great booking agent that's going to keep pushing you to find tours to get your band name out there. And your manager, someone who's creating networking relationships, you know, just out there trying to show people why your band is worth their time.
Right.
You know, and that was where we were. And then Adventure Cat was like that kind of first step into like, this is what it's like to have a real backing of a label. And it was great for us.
That's great. I like that mentality too, because there's two things that I think that you hit on that I think is great advice for bands that are up and coming is one, like be open to everything, right? Like, you don't, and the other thing is you don't know what labels are going to turn into next year, like, or the year after that, what genres they'll be focused on or whatever, right? Like it's constantly shifting. Look at, there's so many, every band that's been around for 10 plus years, odds are they've been on multiple different labels. And two is like, and I don't even know if you realize this, but I think that what's unique about your stories and everything is that you guys never take for granted what you have. And I'm feeling like, you know, you have to, you look at the opportunity that you have, and it's not necessarily just like getting the opportunity is not winning, right? It's capitalizing on the opportunity, right? Just like you said, it's not like you can't just get a contract from a label and then it's done, right? Like that doesn't mean shit unless you're willing to put in the work, and then they'll help you along that road, but they're not going to want to put in work if you're not going to put in work.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's my thing is when we signed the contract and we were just like, yo, we're on Fearless now. It's like, now is not the time to sit down on the couch and put your feet up. Now is the time to grind as hard as you possibly can, because now we have this, this entity that's going to, you know, give us a platform and push things that we have. So it's harder. It's like, work harder now.
Yeah. Yeah, you know,
we definitely put all of our eggs into the basket. We pushed all our chips in now, and it's like signing that Fearless deal was like, this is the, at least to this point, this is like the 5-year plan.
Yeah.
Like we're going for it now. And now
going hard.
Yeah, you have to go harder. You're like, I've been only putting in this much. Like keeping grinding nonstop.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell, man. I mean, your band name pops up everywhere for me, so you're doing it right.
That's good to hear.
I'm gonna shift gears a little bit. I want to just touch on a couple things that I thought were kind of funny. Did I see Andrew Cram in your music video?
Yes you did.
I thought so. What's I haven't spoken to him in forever, but he was Set It Off's merch guy when we toured, and I was like, I know that guy.
Easy.
Yeah,
so I guess it's interesting, but Andrew has been our manager.
Oh, yep. Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, management, yeah.
Yeah, since we signed. So him and Jesse Labar, who is our really good friend, they've worked in tandem with managing us now since
2016, 2015 maybe. I mean, we've known Jesse for years. He was a promoter for the Tampa area, and that's how we met him. I literally hit him up and I said,
wait, what's his last name?
Labar.
Yeah, I know that guy. I'm gonna cut that out. Yeah, don't worry. Yeah.
But Andrew and Jesse had a relationship, which is kind of like when one of them found us, they had like a relationship, and Andrew was just moving to LA, and he always wanted to kind of do this part of music, but he never wanted to have like a full roster. He wanted to be able to focus on like bands, and him and Jesse are those types of guys that have believed in like our band and our vision
for years
from day one, literally. So that's our uncle. That's our brother. You know, he's been there for forever. Lives in LA now.
I know. I should look him up because I just got out here. And you guys used to, you at the time you were with Donovan, right?
Yeah. He was our booking agent. Yeah.
Yeah.
He
started. I play in a band with Donnie now.
What band? Oh,
what band?
Nova Charisma.
Oh, you play in Nova Charisma. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Donnie really is one of my, I used to actually be a booking agent at Artery as well. So like me and Donnie have known each other for a very, very long time.
I haven't talked to him in a minute and I would love to just say what's up.
Yeah. Donnie was awesome for us.
Absolutely incredible.
Great dude. He was episode one.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. He's a great dude.
One of the most talented people I know.
He's just the hardest working, most talented dude I know. It's as equally frustrating as it is inspiring.
I feel that.
So a couple other things. So when did you guys actually sign with Fearless?
I remember signing.
It was the day that we started. It was like the day or two before we started the Silverstein tour, which was
so it would have been December 2018.
That's when we announced. Yeah.
Got it. And then you went right on that Silverstein. It was like Silverstein Hawthorne Heights, right?
Yeah, and As Cities Burn.
Yeah. That tour must have been nuts.
Yeah, that was the first big one for us, and we were just like,
holy, that was like the first eye-opening, like big one. And yeah, we learned, and I can't even say enough about Hawthorne Heights and Silverstein, especially like those guys, the things that they taught us.
They took us under their wing, honestly. Yeah. Like, hey,
we learned
how it goes,
so much, and we still have great relationships. Like Anthony was on lead singer Syndrome.
Yeah, with Shane. Yeah, great.
Yeah, and then like we're really great friends with everybody at Tandem, which is Paul Kohler and Richard Fernandez run Tandem. So there's like a lot of weird crossover now, where like we all encounter each other all the time through other things.
Right.
So it's cool how that worked out to be that.
Yeah, that's such an interesting tour. I love that, with that As Cities Burn too, right?
Yeah.
Man, I grew up with that band. I would love to see them again.
I went to see Under Oath's last show at Janice Live, and they were on it, and that was the first time that I had ever seen them live.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Under Oath is back now, but it was
pretty crazy
to be
emotional
on the tour with those guys.
Yeah.
I miss everyone on the tour. They were all great.
So let's kind of move toward the future a little bit. Obviously you said you're writing or whatever. I want to ask a couple questions, just hypotheticals. So do you have like, if you could put together a dream tour right now that you guys would be a part of, what would that look like?
Okay. You go and then I'll go. That'll be easier.
Oh, I don't know. That's a tough one for me.
All right. I think I can answer it right now.
Yeah. You could go. I'm going to think about this.
Yeah. Sure. So I think dream tours are great, but you have to do like no more than four bands because people love
that. Let's keep it four bands and let's keep it like reasonable too. It can't be like Kiss, the Beatles.
Yeah, that's one of the four. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
So like in no like particular order, like My Chemical Romance headlines 100%.
Okay, so you're in fucking arenas already. So go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, of course. And I would not put a dream tour, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely My Chem. And then for like Capstan, it's like there's so many different influences, but just speaking on behalf of the other guys.
Every time I die,
like
let's go. Every time I die.
Maybe like Every Time I Die, or like someone like Protest the Hero or Between the Buried and Me.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously this is totally hypothetical. But I mean, Ice Nine Kills.
That would be sick. That would be amazing. Right? I would love that.
I mean, that would be easy, and we'll open. It's okay. Like we're
dude.
Cool with that.
I think that could be a cool fit. If it was my band, like I'd be about that. Well, that's something I'll bring to the table for sure. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah,
I would. Yeah, go for you.
Oh no, I was just gonna say. I would say Every Time I Die. If Queen were still around, I would love for Queen to
like a true dream tour would be Queen. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone would turn that down.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said Every Time I Die, because I also wanted to ask the live beat. That's your new single, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
I feel like it's more like a Maylene.
It is, but you know, I heard like the riffy parts of like Every Time I Die in there. But the thing I really appreciated about it was that it was a departure from the other stuff that I had watched on YouTube, but it still sounded like you guys.
Cool.
You know,
awesome.
Like it was. Go ahead.
We call it live bait. We call it live bait too, because it was just a song we wrote to play live, just to get people.
Oh yeah, you can totally tell.
Yeah. And it was like, you know what? I think everybody gets down to this song when we play it live. So let's fucking record it. Like, it was going to be, it was a B-side from our last record. It was like, it doesn't really fit on here. And we were like, it's never going to be on anything. So we finally were like, with everything that fucking happened, we were able to release it. And it's,
that was, like, that was kind of the only reason that song came to fruition was because of the virus.
The virus. Yeah. So we were just like, you know, let's just, let's get something out. Like, this is perfect. We have it. We're ready to go. And we did it.
We like recorded it because of Harry. We recorded it in like 2 days.
Yeah.
Because we already had it written and shipped it out to mixing and mastering. It was cool because we got Nolly to mix it.
Oh, great.
And that's like a dream for us just to hear what his sound like. And then Chris Crummett mastered it.
Sweet.
And so it was just like, why the fuck not? And our boy Dieter had all the footage that we were like, we got to do something with this.
I loved the video too.
We were just like, let's be something, do something fun and crazy. And like, it was about, I mean, we would be totally lying if it wasn't about fan service, making people feel a little better and happier and giving a little bit more merit to a song where people are like, are you ever going to record that song you've played live?
Yes, exactly.
And we're like, yes, we did. Here it is.
I love that it kind of gives a sneak peek into like your band too, though, like that video. It's like, it's really fun. It brought me back like to touring, like in my old band, you know, like just like grinding and having to like, I miss all that shit like so much, but, and there was a one bit in your bio, it said something like everyone has like a different like trait and, but you all just drink a shitload of beer.
Yeah, we do. Oh yeah.
And I saw that in the video too. I was like, oh, I get it there.
I'm
way better on tour though. I drink a lot of beer when I'm home, but on tour it's like, you know, you're a vocalist, you can't get smashed.
Yeah.
Like,
but it is fun.
No way I'd survive. You
know? We have our rules and like we're really smart about the pre-show way that we do it. But yeah, like we, you know, I think some bands like they just deal with things a lot differently and like we just have fun.
Yeah.
And like that's, I don't think that has, that's not a requirement of having fun, but like
as long as the show sounds good, we have as much
fun. We'll have a couple of cordials. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Just a cordial, that's all.
I slowed down with drinking on tour just because I'm feeling my age now.
Don't worry.
Sucks.
31 last week, so I'm like,
I just turned 31, so it's like I'm starting to feel it. Thanks, man. I do miss like, I don't know, those like van nights when you're driving in the van, you're just wasted. Well, I don't know why it's fun, but
how the hell did we do? We used on the first tour when we started, I'm like we were drinking really early, and I'm like,
and then
how
did we show
them for the show that night? How did we do that?
Dude, we had a sponsorship from, shout out real quick to Click Vodka. I don't even know if they still exist, but it was this vodka company in Pittsburgh. And I hope they don't hear this because I will say that it is like not good. it was not good vodka, but they would ship us like at the beginning of every tour, like 3 cases of it. So we'd leave for tour with like 50 bottles of vodka. And so it was just all day like drinking the worst vodka ever, just straight from the bottle in the van.
You can't do that now. You can't do that.
Oh, dude, no, but I used to be able to like sober up, play a show, and then drink again. But now it's like I have a few shots and I can't even play, even if I'm drunk. Even drunk. I just feel like shit.
Joe is like a great, he's a great, he holds us down because he's like, you better not fuck up that part, bro.
See, we needed that in my old band because everyone just thought it was really funny when we were bad.
Yeah. It's funny. And then Joe's like, I'm listening. I'm going to be listening. You fuck that up. I'm listening.
He's like, we have our in ears and stuff. He'll turn. He's like, oh, all right. I think you're a little drunk. I'm going to turn your up in my mix a little bit.
So that's hilarious. That's so funny. So you have a band dad that kind of reprimands everyone.
Joe's band dad.
Joe
for
is
sure.
just he's one of the most interesting individuals. He's a prodigy by every stretch of the imagination with guitar and with writing music. But he's also just his interest, it knows no bounds. Like he wants to know everything about guitar, everything about music theory. And it's imprinted a lot on our band. It's really helped step up like the, let's not be good, let's be great.
Yeah.
And be great from our recordings and our writing to every little thing that we do, including live performances. So alcohol is fun and it's great, but like we really have taken like that step to be like, hey,
you got
to
be careful.
You got to be careful, and you want every night to be better than the last. You know?
But you know what? You should just do one show where you're all just blackout.
I would say the best time to do that would be a Halloween show.
Yeah.
So then we dress up and have a great time with it.
There was this band that did a music video. I wish I could remember the name of the band. It was like an indie band, and this was probably a few years ago, but they did a video where it was like an hour long video, and they just played the song over and over. But after every song, every time they played it, they would either shotgun a beer or take a shot. And by the end of the video, it was just like nonsense. it was incredible. But like that stuff, I love that. I always like when bands advertise how much fun they like to have, you know?
Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah. That's kind of what we did with Live Bait. We were just we have fun.
Yeah, it's
like,
great.
You know, serious, but we have a lot of fun.
If you want to meet us at merch and buy us a beer, we're not going to say no.
All right, I'm going to keep that in mind.
There you go.
All right, so I have one more question. It's the question I ask every band before we wrap up.
Okay.
And I say this to everyone too, like, give me a real story here. Like, don't answer it like I'm alt press or like some thing like that or whatever. Like, do you have, like, give me a highlight tour story that maybe you wouldn't normally.
Like good or bad?
It can be either. Just give me like a crazy tour story that like.
You got to tell it, man. You just have to.
Okay. I'm excited.
I don't think – I mean, you might be getting exclusive content because I don't know if this story has seen the light of day yet.
Okay, yeah. I'm ready.
But I'm not really – I mean, it happened to me. I'm not extremely ashamed by it because of the circumstances, but all right. Let me preface this by saying to sleep on it, we're really sorry.
Oh, God.
So it's really – it actually works out well that we talked a bit about Warped Tour because on the bus, you have bunks. Mm-hmm. And
is that who you were sharing with, Sleep On It?
With Sleep On It, yep. Okay. So I was in the bottom bunk in the far back right. So in the bus, there's six on each side. Mm-hmm. And so there's stacks of three. And I was at the total, the bottom, and then Luca from Sleep On It was in the middle, and Harry was at the top. But Luca had he'd been sick or something, and so he was actually sleeping in the back cabin, mm-hmm. which actually was like
the lounge.
Thankful. Yeah, the lounge.
Yeah.
And I had been having trouble in the bottom bunk. I'm a pretty big guy, but like it was weird. I was having like night tremors because of the confined space, mm-hmm. and like I'd wake up kind of like in a panic. So there were some nights I would kind of like
lean out
of it. Of the bunk and kind of sleep with my head at least in the open space.
I would love to just see your head sticking out sleeping.
Like kind of like my shoulders and the head in the middle of the aisle. Yeah. And it was like, wasn't always even on purpose. It was just, I would end up there. Mm-hmm. But Harry has been known to sleepwalk. And obviously, you know, with alcohol, he'll do it more, but he's also been known to sleep pee. yeah. And so I couldn't make this up if I tried.
But, no way.
There was one night on the floor where I woke up. It was the end of my dream, too. I was getting rained on. Like, I'm not lying. And I woke up. I mean, as quick as you can wake up and be in a panic and know exactly what is happening, I knew immediately. And I sprung up. And I fucking punching him in the face, and everybody's asleep in the bunks. But one of our, and I apologize to Matt, our bus driver as well, because one of his big rules was like $500 fine if you piss or you shit on my, like anywhere, if you piss anywhere or shit on my bus. And like this happened, and I somehow was able to keep my composure and not like scream and wake up. But I punched Harry in the face six times, and he knew exactly what was happening too.
Oh, sorry.
Dude, poor guy is just getting hammered.
I was livid. And I think the hardest part of that story is like I definitely got piss in my mouth. 100% like tried Harry's like had piss in my mouth. But here's the thing, and this sounds like this is a ridiculous statement to try to justify it, but Harry, thank God, had drank like 6 bottles of water before he went to bed because he was really dehydrated from work tour. And even our bus driver, Matt's like, you have to drink water, man. And that was why he peed in his sleep, because he wasn't even that drunk. But he
was having a dream.
He was having a dream. And he started
pissing off a cliff.
He said he was off a cliff.
He was incredible. On the top bunk.
Dude, yeah, at least it was like clear pee, right?
Yeah, it honestly, it sounds crazy, but it had no flavor.
Let's stay on this for a second, because I this is now the second pee story that's come up on the podcast. Okay. But I will tell you, myself, I'm no stranger to this kind of stuff, because Venetia Fair would do like some outlandish things. So let me ask you, because I have tried both clear pee and not clear pee at different times. Okay.
Oh, man.
Did it taste like pee still? Like, do you know it has that, like, now I'm going into talking about like the specific taste. Like, it there almost has like the citrusy, sharp, like pungent smell.
The thing I could only describe, like, it's such a quick moment, is it's like, if I don't know how to put it any other way besides like it was vitamin-y.
Yeah, right, dude, that's a great way to put it. It like, just like seems you like your like the taste of an earthy vitamin in your mouth.
Earthy, yeah, really earthy type vitamin. Like that's, but it was like it was like, I don't know, like watery vitamins. Like it was very weird. So I think it would have been way worse if he wasn't hydrated.
Oh man,
for obvious reasons. Yeah. But yeah, that's probably our. There's a lot of them, but that's
no one woke up during this whole thing.
No, and Sleep On It doesn't even know it happened, nor does our bus driver.
Well, they do now.
How do you not share that information immediately? That's like an incredible story.
I was scarred kind of right away. I was scarred, and Harry like lived in my – he was sorry for a long time. And so he was doing things, and like – I feel like if anything that's scarring happens like that, you just need some time. And I needed some time. And everything becomes funnier.
Oh, as it goes on.
What was the cleanup like?
But something like that. But yeah, it doesn't even really feel like it happened, because it seems like it was so long ago now. But me and Harry talk about it. We have a special bond now.
You should. Like, here's a great opportunity. There's an opportunity here for great content.
Like, yeah,
you should, now that this story is out, I feel like you have to pee on his head.
Like, I think there's a good opportunity, and with the way that we are as a band, like, that could very well happen someday.
I will do everything I can to get a tour together if you just pee on his head. Don't take my word for it. Whatever I can do to help to get pee on someone's head, I'm in.
Hey, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Oh, that's so good. All right, well, look, guys, is there anything else that you guys want to advertise, shout out before we wrap up?
There's a lot of things, but just simply, if you don't know who we are, we're Capstan, and go find us on socials. Let's be friends. At Capstan Band on Instagram and Twitter, and go to our YouTube channel, subscribe, and we've been doing weekly streams on Twitch during the whole pandemic. So go find our Twitch. We have a lot of fun content. It's not peeing on each other.
Not yet.
But there's a lot. Not yet. Yeah. There's a lot of good content that we're trying to build that up a little bit more. So let's be friends.
Yeah. And thank you, Joe, for having us on.
Yeah,
this.
Of course. This was fun. And yeah, hopefully we link up together soon and we're not locked down and we can do some shows and hang out. But this was a lot of fun. Let's keep in touch. I want to hear more about your band and stuff, because I feel like what I was trying to do with my old band, you have like successfully done. So I would love to hear more about it. This was great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Joe, for having us.
This is awesome.
Absolutely. Well, I'll talk to you guys soon. All right.
All right, Joe. Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.